Thanks for watching, everyone. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, we're going to take a deep dive into the world of cyber risk modeling today. Now, as you'll all know, we now have four 144A cyber catastrophe bonds that have been issued, as well as a number of private cat bonds and collateralized reinsurance deals in the cyberspace as well. And so it's a good time to look at some of the fundamentals that underpin the models that help to explain the risks contained in these transactions to ILS investors. And so I'm delighted to welcome two specialists from Moody's RMS who can help to explain more about the importance of cyber risk models for insurance-linked securities arrangements. We've got Damini Mago, Senior Product Manager Cyber, and Alice Woolley, Lead Consultant Risk Advisory, with us today. Thank you both for joining me. It's great to see you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So, we're going to explore this exciting new sector of the catastrophe bond market and have a look at how the risk models are helping to support sponsors and investors in their understanding of cyber and these transactions so that we can get more deals to market. So, let's begin with what we've seen so far. Perhaps, Damini, you could help by setting the scene for our viewers. You can explain a little bit of the backdrop and give an overview of some of the activity seen to date in cyber cat bonds and ILS.
Of course, it's an exciting time. I mean, 2023 saw the first cyber catastrophe bonds come to the market. It was a watershed moment bringing this to the ILS market. And as you mentioned, by the end of quarter four, we saw four 144A cat bond transactions securing about $415 million in protection for those sponsors. Moody's RMS was proud and delighted to support Beazley and Gallagher with the risk modeling for the 144A cyber cat bond, Polestar Re. And we feel it's the first big step to open the doors for that additional capacity that the market clearly needs, especially with the premium growth that's expected from it. And we view this as a pivotal step in establishing cyber as a viable asset class for investors, contributing to the advancement of the cyber insurance market. So definitely an exciting time.
Yes, couldn't agree more, Damini. It really has been exciting to see. And it's been a long time coming when you think of how long people have been working towards these first transactions as well. There's so much work that went into educating investors and getting the market up to speed on this. So, Alice, turning to you, I mean, one of the most important things has been the education of investors to get these first full cyber cat bonds to the marketplace. Perhaps you could tell us about the role of Moody's RMS here and how you work to help them get to grips with what was a very new peril for some of them.
Absolutely, Steve. So, you know, it is really encouraging to see how ILS investors sort of stepped up. They're getting to grips with this new challenge, this completely new peril, and they're supporting not just one, but multiple transactions. So, you know, we've seen really encouraging signs, and that education has been a really key focus and a key part of this long journey of getting to where we are with the cyber transactions. So, you know, I think, you know, at first, if you're unfamiliar, cyber can seem like this really big, scary Armageddon type risk, you know, but you need to spend a bit of time with it. Think about what's actually uncovered in those insurance contracts. You know, what are the types of events? What's included? What's excluded? You know, where are we thinking about in terms of our modeling? What are the assumptions made there? And as you build that sort of level of comfort, you start to see a shift in the investor community. You know, they've been really receptive to sort of understanding the risk and extremely positive in supporting the transactions. So, you know, at Moody's RMS, our role really for quite some time now has been helping on along that sort of education path. And we sort of bring this combination of both, you know, over 20 years expertise in 144A transactions, and also this really mature cyber model. This is being already well accepted by the reinsurance capital providers. And so sort of bringing those two things together put us in a great position to be the modeling agent for Polestar Re, and providing those services. And not only just for Polestar Re, but we're also committed to for our ILS investor clients to provide them with remodeling services for all 144A cyber transactions. This is really the start of the journey, but we're excited to sort of see where that goes. And we're really hoping to continue to work closely with the market, make sure that we continue that process of educating them as we continue to develop our models and learn more about cyber.
Thank you, Alice. Yes, and you make a really good point there about the remodeling services, because that's going to be critical as we get more transactions in the marketplace as well. So good to hear. Now, perhaps we should go a little deeper into the risk model itself. And Damini, maybe you can talk a bit about what the Moody's RMS cyber model actually covers.
Absolutely. So I like to think cyber as a family of perils, like you would think about NatCat. You've got your wind perils, your earth perils. With cyber as well, we similarly think about five distinct perils that we end up modeling. So one being data breach, so your standard data breaches that you see out there, the cloud outages, what happens when a cloud service provider goes down, ransomware, malware activity, DDoS attacks, and then you've got your business email compromise, BEC, or financial theft. So when we start to view the risk, we see it from the lens of these five different perils. When we think about modeling this risk, we sort of divide it into sort of two worlds. So first being attrition, which is your day-to-day risk and in day-to-day activity that one sees on their book. And the other is more losses arising from that catastrophe or that systemic risk. And our approach to modeling those two varies quite a bit. While you can use historical data to have a sense of what that near future looks like, what your day-to-day activity looks like, you can build statistical models based off of that data to define sort of your attrition element of the risk. But as soon as you get into the systemic or catastrophe risk, you have to be able to use other techniques to model such a risk. History can only get you so far. So for example, similar to climate change, the obvious events or risks that are your biggest threats today are not going to be probably your biggest threats tomorrow. There's always going to be, especially in the cyber phase, new vulnerabilities emerge. The risk landscape and the profile changes, there's geopolitical influence, the threat actors are continuously updating themselves. So one essentially, from a modeling standpoint, needs a stable framework to sort of model and assess the risk and keep up with the changing risk landscape, especially when we're thinking about that systemic or aggregation potential. And it's quite relevant for the ILS investors as well. So our approach to handle that systemic nature has been to build those causal models that establish a comprehensive view of the risk by modeling the real-world physics and dynamics of the ecosystem. So you're thinking about threat actors and softwares and vulnerabilities and how do they actually interact with each other as to how do you enter a company's network, what you do once you're in a company's network, and to actually fall into the physics of the system rather than relying on, say, historical events and capturing the risk a lot more holistically. So it's basically a bottom-up data-driven approach of understanding the mechanics of how a cyber catastrophe can manifest itself. And then once it does, what does that impact look like? And that's one of our key foundational stones on modeling on the catastrophe side of the fence.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. There's such a lot goes into these cyber models as well. It's a really diverse range of potential threat actors, as you said, and the different types of exploits are obviously evolving all the time. Alice, as we continue to look more deeply at the model, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about how the risk model gets applied to different types of 144A cat bonds, such as those we've seen in the market so far.
Of course, Steve. So, as Damini mentioned, we have this model, but we need to then sort of convert that into understanding the risk metrics for a particular transaction structure. So, the starting point, for Polestar Re, for example, where we were the modeling agent, we took the information in detail around what are Beazley's cyber exposures. So, for an indemnity deal, we need to understand in detail, what that exposure is. Similarly, for other deals, we might have more or less granularity in terms of that initial data, depending on what the sponsor chooses to disclose. Next, we are taking the Moody's RMS cyber model, as Damini was describing. So we can sort of take that outside out of the box. We plug in the exposures, and we can build a view of what the potential cyber scenario footprints can look like from that modeling. Next, we take those occurrence level structures, and we can sort of apply those structures onto the model outputs to understand what are the risk metrics and start to build up a series of risk exhibits which are helpful for investors to understand, the nature of that risk and what the sort of the details look like. So, in terms of where the scenarios, another key part of that process is looking at, what are the event definitions? What are those events that could cause a trigger for this particular structure? And how does that map to the scenarios that we're modeling already in the Moody's RMS model? So we need to sort of go through a careful process of mapping those together and ensuring that what we're modeling is representative of the sort of the types of events where, which are captured within the risk. And then from that process, we can produce a set of an expertise risk analysis. So we're including our view of the key risk metrics, some very standardized risk exhibits, and also details of our methodology and approach. And really the aim is that the look and the feel of this risk analysis is something that investors are quite familiar with from Nat Cat bonds. So many of those exhibits, such as the contribution to expected loss, are drilling down into, what are the size companies or the jurisdiction of those companies that are sort of feeding into those losses. Those are things that investors are fairly familiar with from other deals, but we are sort of translating that now into the cyberspace.
Great, thank you, Alicia. That's a good way to say it, that you're translating some of the techniques that have been used elsewhere now into cyber to help investors understand this. And Alice mentioned event definitions there, but Damini, perhaps you could talk about that a little more, as I know this is one of the critical areas for investors to understand where losses could come from. And what are the main drivers of risk for the four 144A cyber cat bonds we've seen so far?
So the four 144A cat bonds that we've seen are triggered by a systemic cyber event. Now that's a very loosely defined term, but all the four bonds essentially have slightly different wordings around it. They have different nuances. Some are a little bit more broader definitions and some are a little bit more narrower. They have different exclusionary language associated with it, but all essentially are capturing those large systemic events and that law that cause loss to, say, a large number of insureds, for example. So in the broad essence of theme, they are capturing similar sort of risk. It's a little bit of nuance around event definition, which is more relevant for, say, lower, say, return period losses, for example. And looking ahead, it'll be quite interesting to see how those event definitions evolve and do they reach some sort of convergence moving forward, as this is the first step of even them trying out those different, say, event definitions within the market itself. As far as the drivers are concerned, as I was describing previously, we talk about five different perils. So when you start looking at the tail on those five different perils, there's a clear trend essentially on the two perils that drive most of that risk, especially with the attachments that are on these contracts for their respective portfolios. The main driver from an RMS perspective is the contagious malware. So that peril drives most of that risk, essentially. So when you think about contagious malware, the peril itself has that inherent quality to cause that widespread systemic damage. Everything's interconnected through similar sort of softwares or similar kind of vulnerabilities that can be leveraged. The threat actors have that level of motivation and that sophistication to be able to launch, for example, such a kind of attack. So we see, for example, from contagious malware, just an example of the kind of event we're looking at. It could be a large widespread wipeware attack, maybe triggered by a state-sponsored attack, a state-sponsored threat actor, where it's simulated through, say, a worm simulation, which is more automated in nature. Nobody has to really sit behind on keyboard to kind of launch such kind of an attack. So it has that systemic potential. It has that reach to reach multiple companies, and that's the typical kind of drivers that you see under the contagious malware umbrella. So you've got your ransomware, wipeware. So those are your typical drivers. So that's the major contributor of that risk. And then, of course, the second peril that ends up driving is cloud outages. And again, no surprises there. You have a cloud service provider, multiple companies are dependent on it, and it goes down for a long duration by maybe an accidental or even a malicious, say, for example, threat actor. And those are the kind of risks that we see end up driving across these four catastrophe bonds that we've seen come to the market yet, especially with respect to the attachment that they've used.
Great. Thank you, Damini. That's actually really helpful. It's a really clear way to understand what the two main threats are to these bonds attaching. Now, we've also seen a mix of different types of bonds. We've seen three indemnity cyber cat bonds, but also one industry lost Cybercat Bond as well, which was the first, also completed in 2023. And Alice, how important do you feel it was that we saw this range of structures coming to market?
Yeah, so it's really great that we saw that, you know, the Matterhorn issuance in 2023. This is using a US industry loss index. And it's great to see that being successful and supported in the market. So, you know, at Moody's RMS, we have our own sort of US cyber industry exposure database, or IED, which contains over 1 million companies. And essentially, we need to leverage some view of what does the cyber industry look like to provide a view of risk for these industry loss-based transactions. And, you know, we can see that it's also crucial to look forward. So we're expanding our industry exposure database to look at a global picture as we see cyber growth in other markets. You know, one thing with cyber is it can be a little bit challenging to form that industry view, you know, that's appropriate for use for this analysis. There's a lot of nuances, there's a lot of differences between different providers in terms of the coverages or the sublimits that they provide. And so having that sort of industry-wide view is quite tricky. Obviously, we have a lot of different nuances within that. So it's certainly one of the challenges which maybe differentiates cyber a little bit more from the traditional nat cat perils that we see. But you know, it's a really great step forward to see that industry loss-based index. And you know, exciting to see some variety in the types of structures that are being placed in the markets. It'd be really interesting to see where it is that sponsors feel that that type of structure suits them best going forward, and how that market evolves over time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's really important to see multiple ways for cedents to bring in capital to support their businesses, and cyber insurance has always lacked sufficient retro and reinsurance capacity. And really, the ILS market looks like it could be capable of helping to fill some of that gap so that the cyber primary market can grow faster as well. Now, as we begin to wrap things up, maybe Alice, I can stick with you and you can explain a little bit about the importance of transparency and how to build investor confidence in cyber risk as part of the ILS asset class.
Absolutely. I mean, I touched a little bit on this earlier, but really transparent approach to a modeling is really, really key to getting investors confident, comfortable, sort of building their own intuition around the results. So, you know, when we have a completely new peril like cyber, we really need to understand, you know, what are those baseline assumptions? How is the modeling taking place? What are those drivers of risk? This is really crucial. And being able to sort of get into the weeds, really dig into the model, and get comfortable is something that's, you know, really critical for investors. So, you know, this is something we're so keen to support within the market. You know, we're doing a lot of outreach and education, as we talked earlier. And also, for example, with Polestar Re, we also look to include within the risk analysis a range of different sensitivity assumptions. So you can understand, you know, what might the risk metrics look like if you use some alternative modeling assumptions. So you can feel start to get a sense for how those values change under alternative assumptions. So for example, we looked at the, you know, various degrees of patching speed. What does that mean for the footprint of a cyber scenario? So yeah, so hopefully we can continue to see investor confidence building around the cyber asset class. And you know, to that end, you know, transparency is really a foundation stone in what we do, and we're aiming to continue that.
Great, thank you, Alice. And now, Domini, perhaps we can close the interview with you and hear your thoughts on the future of cyber in the ILS market and also your ambitions for Moody's RMS to continue supporting healthy development of cyber ILS.
Yeah, I think I keep using the word exciting quite a few times during this interview, which I've just realized, but we are looking forward to supporting the growth of the cyber ILS, and we want to enable the cyber ILS market to continue to advance and solve the challenges of the future. And it's quite a significant time at the moment. From a Moody's RMS perspective, cyber is a top priority for us. We've significantly increased our investment in cyber risk modeling, analytics and solutions to help build that confidence, reduce that uncertainty, and to kind of support the market. But as well as we've taken the charge of forming a cyber industry steering group with some of the leading market participants as well to help understand this risk and just build more confidence as a community and as a market going forward. So that's one of the key areas that we are focused on at this point in time. And of course, bringing in that confidence to the capital markets, it's a very big part of that equation that we're committed to as well. So yes, we do hope to continue to work with the industry and the market along that journey and support its development. Definitely.
Great. Thank you, Damini. Very good to hear again, because I think the industry liaison is going to be really critical as cyber develops within ILS, and as this is a peril that's going to keep evolving over time, they really need to stay close to the experts in analyzing the risk too. So great to hear. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate you sharing your time with me today, Damini and Alice from Moody's RMS. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us, Steve.
Thank you.